sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Together. Chaitanyam sarvagam sarvam sarvabhuta guhashayam yat sarva vishayatitam tasmai sarva vide namaha. Very good. We'll be starting with verse 21 today. Before we pick up the thread, just a quick announcement. We have just put out our assistive listening devices again. They had been out before the pandemic. After the pandemic, we neglected to do that. Anyway, they are now available if you have any difficulty with hearing. Those earphones may help you. Can we turn the fan off, please? And the other thing is I'd like to, there's one question we'll deal with here before we pick up the thread. In a prior class, I mentioned that Shruti, Yukti, and Anubhava are the three standards, so to speak, on which all these teachings stand. Shruti, scripture, Yukti, reasoning, and Anubhava, experience. These teachings must be reconciled with all three. That is, a revelation in scripture, Shruti, must be reasonable, Yukti. If the revelation in scripture is not reasonable, it gets rejected. Period. Full stop. So whatever is taught has to be, first of all, it has its origin in scripture, Shruti. It must be tested with logic and shown to be reasonable, Yukti. And final one, Anubhava, it must be consistent with experience. It cannot be counter to your experience. For example, if I tell you that this sky is green, that's counter to your experience. So whatever is taught here has to be consistent with experience. The question is, my query is on Anubhuti. What will lead to Anubhuti? This is a very common misunderstanding, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. Sorry. I forgot. Very good. I want to apologize to our online viewers for being very careless and not turning on the recorder. Anyway, I'm sorry. We're dealing with a question about Anubhuti, which literally means experience, and it's a common misunderstanding that you require a special kind of experience in order to be enlightened. Some kind of mystical experience, some kind of transformative experience. That's a very common teaching, and it's absolutely not what the ancient rishis taught. And that's a big topic. I don't want to get into it in detail. But in this threefold basis for Vedanta, Shruti, scripture, Yukti, reasoning, and Anubhuti or Anubhava, experience, that word experience does not refer to a special, unique, spiritual, transformative experience. It refers to, it just says experience. And specifically, what is taught in Vedanta, Shruti, has to be consistent with reasoning, Yukti, and has to be consistent with experience. That's what it means. Not a unique experience, but rather what is taught here has to be consistent with experience, and we have lots of Vedantic teachings to do that. For example, when Vedanta says your true nature is Ananda, you think, I don't think so. I don't experience Ananda right now. So these are the issues which are then addressed through the teachings of Vedanta. We have to reconcile how it is that your true nature as Satchidananda is, in fact, full and complete right now, but your mind is incapable of appreciating that truth because of the so-called veil of ignorance. So there's a lot of teachings which don't give you a unique, amazing spiritual experience, teachings which reconcile. The wisdom of the ancient rishis is reconciled with your experience. Okay, enough said. Now we will pick up the thread. I think we'll finish our text today. I hope so. Can we turn the light on, please? Because this is our summary of the whole chapter. Most of the chapter, I should say, is dealing with these threefold objection to Shankara's famous dictum, Jnanam Eva Moksha. Shankara is famous for that statement. Moksha, liberation, freedom from suffering and freedom from rebirth, is the result of Jnanam Eva, knowledge alone. And Shankara says that very, what is the word, unequivocally? Fancy word. He says that with great certainty, because if the problem is ignorance, the solution is knowledge and knowledge alone. And this is what we understand through the teachings of Vedanta. But in his time, there were many spiritual teachers deeply committed to the ritualistic portion of the Vedas, the Karma Kanda. And they objected to that. They said, how can you give up this ritualistic portion of the Vedas and simply focus on this knowledge? And they had three arguments, and that's what we've seen mostly, and we'll finish that topic today. The first argument was sahakari, and that is that the rituals of the Vedas are helpful in knowledge producing its result. The rituals of the Vedas are helpful. They are auxiliaries to helping to produce results. Of course, we refute that, and we'll see more refutation today. Second argument is the rituals in the Vedas are vihita. They're ordained. They're commanded by the ancient rishis. The same rishis who taught tattvamasi, the same rishis tell you to do these rituals. How can you choose tattvamasi and ignore the rituals? That's the second argument. And the third argument is pratyavaya, the so-called sin of omission. There are certain rituals you're supposed to do. If you were a pious brahmana living in Shankara's time, there are certain rituals that you must do every day. To fail to do those mandated rituals results in pratyavaya. Yavaya, sin of omission, and that sin of omission, of course, will then become an obstacle to whatever you want to accomplish in life, including moksha. Pratyavaya becomes an obstacle to moksha. So these are the three arguments, and now we'll see Shankara's closing statements in which he refutes all three of these. We pick up the thread in the second half of verse 21. I'll remind you that verses are not sentences, and that a sentence or idea can end in the middle of a verse. A sentence or idea can carry over several verses. So don't think of these verses as sentences. The prior topic was concluded in the first two quarters of verse 21. We start with the second two quarters of 21. Let's recite the verse first. Amritattvam shutam tasmat, amritattvam shutam tasmat, tyajyam karma mumukshubihi, tyajyam karma mumukshubihi, agnishtom avarit yuktam, agnishtom avarit yuktam, tatredam abhidhiyate, tatredam abhidhiyate. So the first half is dealing with the subject matter that we talked about extensively in our prior class, so we'll start in the second half. He says, this is actually a reference back to verse 10. We're now in verse 21. So back in verse 10, the Purva Pakshi, who is that? The objector. The objector said, and the argument, I'll give you the argument in paraphrase and we'll see this verse. Back in verse 10, the Purva Pakshi gave the argument that the Agnishtoma ritual, one of many Vedic rituals, can be done with or without certain kinds of devotional meditations called upasana. Upasana is a devotional meditation, visualization, and this Agnishtoma ritual can be done without upasana or with upasana. You get a choice to do it either way. But if you do it with upasana, it yields more powerful results. This is the argument. So Agnishtoma is an example of sahakari up on the board for our online viewers. So the three arguments here, sahakari means that the upasana devotional meditations are an auxiliary which can make the Agnishtoma ritual more powerful. And so here, this is the argument. He says, Agnishtoma vat iti uktam. Actually, this is Shankara's response to that argument. The argument was made back in verse 10. Here Shankaracharya addresses it. He says, iti uktam, it was said, back in verse 10, what was said? Agnishtoma vat. It is like Agnishtoma. And to fill in the whole argument, just like Agnishtoma becomes more powerful when it's accompanied by these devotional meditations called upasana, in the same way, the knowledge taught by Vedanta becomes more powerful when it is accompanied by Vedic rituals. So this is the full argument. And Shankara says, Tatra, with regard to that argument, idam abhidhiyate. This is being said. What is his response is in the next verse. And before we see the verse, let me just give you the idea. There's a style of argumentation used, actually not just in Vedanta, but any kind of philosopher or thinker who's engaged in pursuit of truth will use certain forms of investigation and argument. One is this. Here the Purva Pakshi, the opponent, gave an example. The question is the example a valid example? He said that the teachings of Vedanta are like the Agnishtoma ritual. The Agnishtoma ritual can be improved by adding this meditation. The teachings of Vedanta can be improved, so to speak, by adding the performance of rituals. He says it is Agnishtoma vat. That vat affix means like or as. It introduces a metaphor, an example. So before we can discuss the metaphor, we have to find out, is it a valid metaphor? Because many, many examples or metaphors are not valid. They don't stand up. And I was trying to figure out a good example. There's a famous poem, I think I shall never see a tree as lovely. No, a poem. I'm not much of a poet. I think I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree. You might have heard that. It's a famous English poem. I think I shall never see a poem as lovely as a tree. Well, lovely as a tree is the example. Is it a valid example? Well, trees are beautiful. So based on, if trees were not beautiful, it wouldn't be a very good example. Trees are beautiful, so it looks like a good example. Suppose the poet were to have written, I think I shall never see a poem as lovely as a pig. Now, we don't generally think of pigs as being beautiful, so that would not be a helpful metaphor. That would be an example of an invalid metaphor. So Shankara now is going to show how this comparison between the teachings of Vedanta and the performance of rituals like Agnishtoma, Shankara is going to show how that comparison is invalid. Let's see that. Naika karaka sadhyatvat, naika karaka sadhyatvat, palanyatvat chakarmanaha, palanyatvat chakarmanaha, vidya tad viparitato, vidya tad viparitato. Drishtante vishamo bhavet, drishtanta vishamo bhavet, drishtanto vishamo bhavet. Good. So he starts listing the reasons that this is not a valid comparison. He says, with regard to the rituals of Agnishtoma, naika means many, na eka, naika. Naika karaka sadhyatvat. Those rituals are accomplished using naika karaka, many factors. Many factors are involved, many elements are involved. For example, many different mantras are involved, many different steps and parts of the rituals are involved, many different kinds of offerings are involved. And there's actually some leeway the priests have in which steps they choose to perform, which offerings they choose to give. Some of it is fixed in the Vedas, but some of it is optional, left up to the priests. So that's true of this Agnishtoma. It's true of all Vedic rituals. There are many factors involved, and some of those factors are optional, some of the factors are required. How about in knowledge? 2 + 2 = 4. How many factors are involved? And don't start counting. 2 + I mean, it's one equation. So 2 + 2 = 4 is one equation. It gives you knowledge. As if you didn't already know the answer, but now you know the answer. 2 + 2 happens to equal 4. There are no factors involved. You have one equation and none of it is optional. It's very simple, cut and dried, as they say in American English. It's just that. So how unlike these complex Vedic rituals, which have so many factors, you can have 3 priests, you can have 5 priests, you can do these offerings, you can do more offerings. Yeah, there are so many different factors and options involved in the performance of rituals. In gaining knowledge, there's no option. In fact, the distinction made, I haven't used this terminology before, it's technical terminology. Things that are up to you are called Purusha Tantra. It's a technical term, and I'm bringing this up because if you study some commentaries, you will see these terms. Purusha Tantra, in fact, let me go to the board since these terms might be unfamiliar. And here, Tantra has nothing to do with the spiritual practices associated with Tantra. Tantra means a method in this case. It has very literal meaning. Purusha Tantra. The commentator makes this point, and I should add this. So, Purusha Tantra, Tantra means method. And here, the method is chosen by the Purusha, the person. In this case, the person doing the rituals, the priests or the Yajamana, whoever is. So, the rituals are Purusha Tantra. The methods are determined by a person. As opposed to knowledge, and this, by the way, this is true not just of rituals, but of all actions. How did you come here today? It was Purusha Tantra. You decided on a method, and for most of you, it was your car. You could have taken a bicycle. You could have hired a helicopter. Not likely, but you get my point, and that is that it's in your hands. It is Purusha Tantra. As opposed to knowledge, which is Vastu Tantra. Vastu means the thing being known. The method used to gain knowledge depends on the object to be known. That's all it means. The method used to do some rituals, to do any action, is up to you. You can do it like this, you can do it some other way, you can choose not to do it, it's all up to you. But for gaining knowledge, there's no choice. The method is determined by the object to be known. So, with that in mind, Shankara's arguments will make more sense. So he says that rituals have many different factors involved. They are Purusha Tantra. It's up to you how you do those rituals, like any actions, as opposed to Jnanam, it's not up to you. It depends on what you want to know. So no choice. Second argument he gives, Pala Anyatvat Cha Karmanaha. His second argument is because karma has pala anyatva, actions in general and rituals in particular can have anya, different pala results. As we said, in the Agnishtoma ritual, if you accompany it with this meditation, it gives you different results. If you make some mistakes during the performance of the rituals, it may give you no results. So the performance of any action, and in particular the performance of these Vedic rituals, can give various results, but that shows how it's not a valid comparison to knowledge, because in knowledge, 2 + 2 = 4, do you get any other results other than knowledge that 2 + 2 = 4? What else do you get? Any different kind of knowledge? Any additional knowledge? Yet more knowledge? Less knowledge? That doesn't apply at all. So for both of these reasons, Shankara points out, vidya tad viparita. Vidya, gaining knowledge, is tad viparita, viparita opposed to tat, that, referring to that performance of rituals. So gaining knowledge and following rituals are completely different. You cannot compare them. And that's what he concludes. Ataha, the end of the third line, for this reason, trishtantaha, the example you gave, the metaphor, Agnishtoma Vat, gaining knowledge is like the performance of this Agnishtoma ritual. Shankara says, no, this is Vishamaha Bhavet. This example is Vishama, inappropriate, inapplicable. Okay, big words coming today. Too many syllables. So, he dismisses the argument. In fact, not only does he dismiss the comparison between seeking self-knowledge through the teachings of Vedanta, is the Purvapakshi compared it to performance of rituals. Shankara turns the tables on this fellow and says, you know, if you want to use this Agnishtoma as an example, it's not an example for Vedanta. It's an example for ordinary actions like farming. The Purvapakshi wants to elevate this idea of sahakari, elevate it to the level of Vedanta and moksha. Shankara says, no, this example of Agnishtoma is so worldly, just like farming. And that's what Shankara gives in the next verse. Krishyadi vatpalarta tvat, Krishyadi vatpalarta tvat, anyakarmopabrimhanam, agnishtomastvapekshetha, vidyanyat kim apekshate. So the Purvapakshi had said Agnishtoma Vat, like the performance of Agnishtoma. Sri Shankara says here, not Agnishtoma, not like Vedanta, but Krishyadi Vat, like Krishi means farming. Literally, Krishi means pulling a plow, but that comes to represent all kinds of farming. Krishi adi, etc. So Krishyadi Vat, like farming, and now he's Shankara is talking about this Agnishtoma. He says Agnishtoma is pala arta twat. Just like farming is done for the sake of crops, in the same way Agnishtoma is done for the sake of gaining punya karma and going to heaven, and the results can be more or less. If, as we said before, with the Agnishtoma, if you add the upasana, the meditation, you can get more results. In the case of farming, if you get more rain, you get more results. So he's saying that don't compare Agnishtoma to Vedanta. Compare it to farming. And he gives another argument. Anya karma upabrimhanam. Upabrimhanam means it is caused to increase. What increases it? Anya karma, other karmas, other actions, caused the increase of the results, as I just said, the performance of this upasana during this Agnishtoma ritual will increase the benefits, the results of that ritual. Just like in farming, the addition, especially in modern times, the addition of fertilizer. This is sahakari. Sahakari means, I'll go back to the board. Sahakari means something additional to get a better result. So you can add fertilizer to your crops and get a better result. You can add upasana to your performance of Agnishtoma to get better results. But to the equation 2 + 2 = 4, what will you add to get better results? That's the point. So it is an inapplicable example. If you want to make an example at all, the example is not between Vedanta and rituals. The example is between rituals and farming. So he says, and Shankara concludes now, Agnishtomaha tu apekshetha. Agnishtoma depends on other factors. Agnishtoma depends on other factors. You have to have the right number of priests, not just the right number of priests, but there were different kinds of priests in ancient times. You have to have one Adhvaryu, you have to have one Ritvik. They had these fancy names. So you have to have not just the right number of priests, but priests from the right lineages. They all had different jobs. And then they did all these complex rituals, and you have to do all the right steps. We had this argument before, Naikakaraka, many factors involved. So that's what he's going on. He's returning to that here. Agnishtoma involves many, many factors. Vidya kim anyat apekshate. But gaining knowledge depends on what other factors? Rituals involve many factors. Gaining knowledge, 2 + 2 = 4. Now, just to apply this, some of you might have this doubt. I thought, Swamiji, I thought there was a requirement for adhikaritvam in Vedanta. Wouldn't that be considered sahakari, auxiliary? And it's not considered auxiliary, it's considered preparatory. So here's the point. Auxiliary means you use it all the way through. Preparatory means you do it first and then you get the knowledge. Once you are an adhikari, what more knowledge? Once you are an adhikari and you hear tat tvam asi once with full understanding, that's it. If you are fully qualified, if you are fully an adhikari, you don't need any other factor other than to be taught. Tat tvam asi, you are that. So for this reason, don't consider the sadhana chatushtaya, viveka vairagya, shamadamadi, some of you know this terminology, all of these factors that are required for preparation, those factors are not sahakari. They don't make knowledge work. They don't assist knowledge. They prepare you for knowledge. I mean, that would be the idea. Be like in cooking. A pot and water are necessary in addition to, if you want to cook rice, you need pot, you need water, you need fire. All of these could be considered sahakari to cook the rice. But threshing the rice is not part of cooking. Threshing the rice is preparatory. You don't thresh the rice at the time of cooking. The threshing has to be done first. The fire and water and pot are used at the time of cooking, so they could be considered sahakari, but threshing the rice takes place before the cooking, so it is not sahakari in that sense. I just want to make it very clear that all of the spiritual practices we do for the sake of becoming prepared students, for the sake of adhikaritvam, Shankara is not talking about those here. Those are absolutely required. If you haven't threshed the rice, how will you cook it? If you're not prepared for this knowledge, how will you gain it? So when Shankara is critical of rituals here, he's not criticizing all spiritual practice in general. And we had this discussion before, I said before, he is criticizing rituals in this narrow context. The attempt to use rituals for the sake of perfect peace and contentment is doomed to failure. The performance of rituals will not result in moksha, freedom from suffering. Okay, enough said. So vidya anyat kim apekshate, knowledge, rituals involve many factors, but gaining knowledge does not require many factors. Therefore, to compare the gaining of knowledge in Vedanta to the rituals like Agnishtoma is an invalid comparison. Now, let's go back to the board. Shankara has spent a lot of time dealing with the first of the three objections here. That is to say that karma is an auxiliary to gaining knowledge. He hasn't really talked about the second and third arguments here. For good reason, he's not so concerned about them. They're very easy to dismiss. The sahakari was really the essential thing. But he, for the sake of completeness, he now finishes his arguments by addressing those second two. Vihita, rituals are required because they are ordained by the Vedas. And the final one, rituals are done because if you don't do them, you incur the sin of omission. So we'll see that right now in the next verse. Pratyavayastutasyaiva, Pratyavayastutasyaiva, Yasyahankara hishyate, Yasyahankara hishyate, Ahankara palartitve, Ahankara palartitve, Vidyete natma natma vedinaha, Vidyete natma vedinaha. Pratyavayaha tu. Tu, but now let us take up pratyavaya. By the way, the argument he gives in this verse applies equally to pratyavaya and vihita. So you'll see the argument equally negates both of those two contentions, both the vihita and pratyavaya, but he explains it in terms of pratyavaya. So pratyavaya, sins of omission, and I'm going to expand it. Not only sins of omission, but the mandated rituals of the Vedas, like your dvikala, agnihotra. In ancient times, you were supposed to do this agnihotra ritual every morning and evening. So this would be an example of vihita karma. And to fail to do that is pratyavaya, a sin of omission. So both of these, tasya eva, accrue to one. Both of these apply to a person, to whom? Yasya, to one for whom ahankara ishyate. One who possesses, literally one who possesses ego, but ego here in a very fundamental Vedantic sense, not ego in the sense of pride, but in a fundamental sense, I am the agent of action. This is the context. I did it. I am the agent of action. When you say, I came to class, that means you are owning the agency of coming here to class. We've had this discussion, actually, I think in the Bhagavad Gita class. Consciousness, which is your true nature, didn't decide to come here to class. The decision to come here to class arose in your mind. And whatever that decision-making process that arose in your mind was, you were aware of it, you were conscious of it. You are the conscious being independent of the decision-making process that takes place in your mind. All of this is to show something we've discussed before. Consciousness, your true nature, possesses no sense of agency. Doing. Consciousness doesn't do anything. And an enlightened person is one who knows, I don't do anything. An enlightened person knows action takes place. Right now, teaching takes place. His body and mind are engaged in the act of teaching. But it is absolutely clear that the consciousness, which is the essence of my nature, is not engaged in the act of teaching. This is Vedantic knowledge. So here, Shankara's argument is that pratyavaya and these two arguments, that some rituals are enjoined, you have to do them every day, and if you fail to do them every day, you will incur the sin of omission. Shankara says, these two points apply to whom? Apply to one who is an agent of action. Both of the arguments deal with action, the action of rituals. So here's the point. Actually, he's gonna make the point in the second half, so let me just share with you. So first half, Shankara says, is that these two arguments, the two arguments that rituals are vihita, enjoined by the scriptures, and the argument that if you don't do certain rituals, you incur a sin of omission, Shankara says, okay, but those arguments apply only to one who has that sense of agency, one who is not yet enlightened. And he concludes then, ahankara palartitve vidyate na vidyate atma vedinaha na vidyate. There are two things that don't exist, atma vedinaha, for one who knows atma, one who knows the true self. Two things don't exist for that person. One is ahankara, and we're using it now in that sense of agency. If you are one who says, I don't do anything at all, then how can you tell me to do these rituals? If your perspective is, I don't do anything at all, then to command or ordain those rituals is useless. And Shankara adds something here, that for the one who is atma-vedi, one who knows one's true nature, one who is enlightened, ahankara is absent, not only ahankara, but also pala artitva, desire for the results of the rituals, is also absent. So someone who desires a particular result through doing rituals might do the rituals, but an enlightened person is free from desire. An enlightened person finds himself or herself full and complete and is no longer driven by raga and dvesha. Therefore, how can you enjoin, command? You have to do these rituals. The enlightened person says, that doesn't apply to me as a perspective. Okay, this then concludes Shankara's rather lengthy argument with this Purva Pakshi, who is clearly a ritualist. And just to put the whole thing in context and summarize it. So we introduced all of this by noting the difference between the Karma Kanda of the Veda and the Jnana Kanda of the Veda. And the important point here, so the Jnana, just to remind you, the Karma Kanda of the Veda contains rituals. Rituals, when performed properly, can help you gain dharma, artha, and kama. Kama, fulfill your desires in this life. Artha, gain wealth and security. And dharma, in this context, means punya karma, blessings that can bless you in your later lives. So if your goal in life is to get dharma, artha, and kama, then you should do the rituals of the Karma Kanda of the Vedas. You are an adhikari for those rituals. Adhikari, you are qualified, you are the proper candidate for doing those rituals. Suppose, though, you don't seek dharma, artha, and kama. Suppose you seek only moksha. If you seek only moksha, how are those... Those rituals are going to be a distraction, and ultimately those rituals will not bring you moksha. No, we had this discussion long ago, no rituals can bring you enlightenment, moksha. So if you are that mumukshu, that seeker of liberation, if moksha is your goal, not dharma, artha, kama, then you are an adhikari for the jnana kanda, the knowledge portion of the Vedas. Now there's one more here. Suppose you are a mumukshu, but you are not ready for Vedantic wisdom. You lack adhikari tvam for this Vedantic knowledge. We said in other contexts, we have said that for this, in fact, our Gita class, we said, for this extraordinary wisdom, you're going to need an extraordinary degree of preparation. And a great many seekers lack that proper preparation. They are not adhikari. So I have to retract what I just said. I said if you seek dharma artha kama, you are an adhikari for the karma kanda. If you seek only moksha, you are an adhikari only for the jnana kanda. Cross that one off, because you may be a mumukshu, but you may lack these crucial qualifications which are required to gain this knowledge. So you want it, but you can't get it because you lack preparation. Then what should you do? And here's filling in the gap. One way of gaining this preparation is to do the rituals in the Karmakanda, but with a crucial difference. Usually, the rituals of the Karmakanda are done for the sake of dharma, artha, and kama. But if you're mumukshu, you don't care about that. You want adhikaritvam. You want inner preparation. You want antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind and heart. Then what can you do? You can do the rituals of the Karmakanda, the Veda, but without seeking the limited results of those rituals, dharma, artha, kama. You can do those same rituals not driven by desire. They call this nishkama karma. You've heard that term. Nishkama karma means to do nishkama karma means to do the actions not driven by desire for the results. In this case, driven by a desire for preparation, for adhikaritvam, for having a pure mind and heart so that you can gain this knowledge. So, now you understand the proper relationship of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda and proper relationship between seeking knowledge and performing rituals. Just to make sure you're clear on this, did Shankara say you shouldn't perform rituals? He never said that. He never said that. He said, if you want moksha, no matter how many rituals you perform, you will never gain moksha. That's what he has said. Okay, enough said. So we come to the closing portion of the chapter. Yeah, we'll finish. Good. Tasmad ajnanahanaya. Tasmad ajnanahanaya. Samsara vinivrittaye, samsara vinivrittaye, brahma vidya vidhanaya, brahma vidya vidhanaya, prarabdhopanishadtviyam, prarabdhopanishadtviyam. So he's now wrapping up this first chapter. Something I think I failed to mention before, the first chapter has a name. I think the names are given by the commentators, not by Shankara. And the name for this chapter, unsurprisingly, is Upodghata Prakarana. Prakarana means chapter or section, and Upodghata is a fancy Sanskrit word for introduction. So this is the introductory chapter, and Shankara concludes everything he said in this chapter by saying tasmat. Therefore, ajnanahanaya, for the sake of destroying ignorance. And remember, way back at the beginning of the chapter, we saw this samsara chakra. You fall into this cycle of birth and rebirth, and you undergo suffering each time around the loop, so to speak. And this falling into the cycle of samsara is due to ignorance and ignorance alone. So he says, samsara vinivrittaye, for the sake of bringing about the cessation of the cycle of samsara. How will you bring about the cessation of the cycle of the cause for the cycle of samsara is ignorance. So for the sake of samsara nivritti, getting out of the cycle of samsara, what is required is ajnanahana, the removal of ignorance. So if you remove samsara by removing ignorance, how do you remove ignorance? In the third line, brahma vidya vidhanaya. through the establishment of Brahmavidya. By gaining this Brahmavidya, you remove that ignorance, that's like a so-called veil covering your true nature inside, thereby putting an end to the cycle of suffering. Now, Shankara has used this word Brahmavidya, knowledge of truth, knowledge of reality, knowledge of Brahman. Turns out that Brahmavidya is traditionally held to be a synonym for the word Upanishad. That seems odd, but Shankara is now going to explain how the word Brahmavidya is a synonym for Upanishad. Here he ends this verse. He says, Prarabdha Upanishad tu iyam. Tu. Now, iyam, this what? Iyam Upanishad. This Upanishad, Prarabdha, you have to break the words apart properly, is being taught. Therefore, this Upanishad is being taught. Why? To get you out of the cycle of samsara, you have to remove ignorance. To remove the ignorance, you need Brahmavidya. And this Upanishad is the source of that knowledge of Brahman, which will end the cycle of samsara. And so he's made he's made them into synonyms. Upanishad is a synonym for Brahmavidya, according to Shankara. And you might wonder, how is that so? Well, he's going to give you a little one-verse grammar lesson, which is the last verse of our chapter. And in this final verse, then, he will show you how the word Upanishad. So Upanishad, as just to make sure we understand clearly, Upanishad is Jnanakanda. If you want a more common synonym to say that Jnanakanda is Upanishad, which means the portion of the Vedas dedicated to spiritual wisdom, that's a more common equation. But to equate Brahmavidya and Upanishad is a little bit more unusual. And what Shankara is saying here is that these teachings of Vedanta are based on the Upanishads, therefore they are considered Upanishads, they are all Brahmavidya. And now he finally says, why is it that the Upanishad means Brahmavidya? He says, Sadir Hupani Purvasya, Quipi Chopani Shad Bhavet, Mandi Karana Bhavacha, Garbhadeshatanatata. Good. So, instead of going through the verse first, let's go to the board and let me show you what Shankara is teaching here. Then the verse will make more sense. All right. This is literally a grammar lesson, a one-verse grammar lesson he gives. And it's not too complicated. But we begin by knowing that most Sanskrit words are based on verbal roots followed by affixes and preceded by prefixes, not surprisingly. So this is how most Sanskrit words are derived. You start with a verbal root. You can add one or more prefixes. You can add one or more affixes. So here, the verbal root of interest is sad. Now, it comes in Sanskrit, it comes as Upanishad. Well, there are grammar rules that force this sa to be pronounced as sha. That's due to grammar rules. So Upanishad is formed from two prefixes, upa and ni. And it turns out that this vowel, E, causes this S to be pronounced as SH. So these are the grammar rules. Sud is a root, and then there is an affix. And Shankara tells you the affix is quip, and I'll tell you what that means. By the way, this is nomenclature from the famous grammar of Panini. So Panini is like the greatest of all Sanskrit grammarians, so great that after more than 2,000 years, we still use his books. Can you imagine? Where in what other field of study will you use a 2,000-year-old manual? Well, we do, in fact, use Panini's sutras even today to understand Sanskrit grammar. That's why it is so... We use it because there's nothing more clear than what he did. Anyway, so some of what we're going to see is based on this. So quip is an affix. I'll explain its function in just a moment. But Panini gives, in a separate text called Dhatupada, he gives three meanings for the root sud. First meaning is visharana. Visharana. Visharana has that sense of when you sit, you go down. You don't sit up, you sit. In fact, in English, you say sit down, right? You never say sit up. You sit down. And this word visharana, which can mean to sit, has that sense of going down, has that sense of declining. And we'll come back to that in just a moment. Second meaning, so we're analyzing the root sud. Second meaning, according to Panini, is gati. Gati means going to your goal, whatever your goal might be. Sud means going towards that goal. And the third is avasadana, which means destruction. Destruction, going, and decline. Okay, these are the three primary meanings for the root sud. And then we have these two prefixes, upa and ni. Upa meaning having a sense of nearness, and ni having the meaning of certainty. The commentator gives all of this in quite some detail. So, and this quip, by the way, in this case, quip is a non-existent syllable. This is just something clever about Panini's system. You have to convert this verbal root into a noun or a verb. To do so, you need to add some kind of affix, but suppose the affix happens to be nothing. There's nothing you need to add. Well, according to Panini, then you have to add a non-existent affix. A null affix is added to turn this into a noun or verb. In this case, the null affix is called quip. I'll stop here. I won't bore you more with this grammar. But now let's see this meaning of Upanishad. So, sud, with the first meaning, visharana, to weaken, to loosen, to cause, to decline. In what sense is that like brahmavidya? Brahmavidya causes the weakening of ignorance, the decline of ignorance. So in the sense of weakening the hold of ignorance on you, causing that influence to decline, that's our first meaning of visharana. Second meaning, brahmavidya leads you to reach the goal. Going to the goal. What is the goal here? Moksha. So sud has that meaning also. And finally, Sad has the meaning of destruction of a sadhana, and in this case, the destruction of ignorance. So what Shankara wants to point out here is that not just one of the three. By the way, you can use a root with only one. The root may have three or four or five meanings. It's okay to use the root with one meaning. But Shankara wants to make it really vividly clear here. He wants to show that all three meanings are valid here. So the word Upanishad means Brahma Vidya. Why? It causes the grip of ignorance is loosened. Also, it helps you go and reach that goal of moksha. And finally, it does the avasadhana, the destruction of ignorance. And it does so with great certainty. Ni. Absolutely. And finally, it does so when you go near. And traditionally, it said when you go near the teacher. When you approach a teacher, almost always this upa is given that meaning. By approaching a teacher, you are most certainly given this Brahma Vidya, this knowledge which is conveyed by the root sad. So there's your grammar lesson for the day. That's enough. Let's finish the verse. So that, and basically what I've just showed you on the board is what Shankara says in this verse. He says, sadehe, for the root sad, upa ni purvasya, for the root sad preceded by the prefixes upa and ni, quipi cha, and followed by this quip affix. So in this way, that cha Upanishad, you have to break the words apart, in this way, Upanishad bhavet, the word Upanishad is derived in this way. And then he gives some further, he explains, this is based on the root meaning of the word Upanishad. And then he explains a little further, mandi karana bhavacha cha. Also because it causes the mandi bhavana weakening. Mandi karana, sorry. It brings about the weakening of that grasp of ignorance. It loosens the grasp of ignorance. Mandi karana literally makes it weak. So it loosens the grasp of ignorance and garbhadehe shatanat tata, and also shatanat because it destroys garbhadehe is an expression for rebirth. Garbha is a womb, garbha, etc. So it leads to the end of rebirth, removing this ignorance. Is becoming enlightened, gaining moksha. Gaining moksha, you're not only freed from suffering in this life, but you're freed from being reborn. So Shankara gives this very nice explanation. So he says he's going to teach Upanishad. Upanishad means this is not from the Vedas, but it contains the same teachings of the Jnanakanda, the Veda. So for that reason, this is Upanishad. And for the second reason, this is also Upanishad, the second reason being this etymological meaning of the word Upanishad. Upanishad finally means Brahma Vidya. So with this, we finish the first chapter of our Upadesha Sahasri. You can see Shankara's brilliance as a teacher. We have much more to see. Next chapter, I think, is just four verses. So very unusual to have such short verses. We'll talk about it in our next class. I don't have the slides up on the website yet, but prior to the next class, the slides will be available if you want to print out a copy for yourself. And we'll conclude with our closing prayers. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya, Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Tat Sat.